Earning your degree online doesn't mean you have to go about it alone. At Capella University, we're here to support you when you're ready. From enrollment counselors who get to know you and your goals, to academic coaches who can help you form a plan to stay on track, we care about your success and are dedicated to helping you pursue your goals. Going back to school is a big step, but having support at every step of your academic journey can make a big difference. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
Hello, it's Jake Sanzano, host of the Jake and Gino podcast, here with my co-host, the multifamily mentor, the coach, chef, father, six best-selling author, the G-Daddy, Gino Barbaro. Gino, how's it going?
Jake, I'm doing great. How you doing, bro?
Always making it happen, big man. Today's guest started his career serving in the United States Navy. After 6 years of service, he went into the real estate mortgage field, and he believes that buying a house creates one of the biggest debts of your life and feels compelled to help you best manage that debt. Is it an investment? Is it not? We'll get into it in a little bit here. So without further ado, Ed Parkot, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
It is our pleasure. Let's get this thing kicked off. Tell us how you got started in the mortgage business.
Well, so you're the energy person on this podcast, huh?
Oh, yes.
Man, it's hard for me to even have that much energy.
Well, he burns out. Ed, he starts real fast and then he just wanes.
Bullshit, dude. We're doing a pull-up competition next time you're at my house, friend. All right? We'll see how far you go.
Do a hanging contest. Let's see.
That's right. So,
that's the one that's
bring
the hardest.
Bring it, Gino.
It's weird because when I was in the Navy and you said 6 years, I always say 5 years, 5 months and 14 days, but who was counting? The issue was when I got out, I kind of got in the real estate industry, but it was one of those times, and we'll talk more about it later, but it was a top of another recession that we were going to happen. And it was 90, 91, and it was not a great time to be in the real estate industry. So I went back to being in computers, which I knew. And basically from that, my neighbor had a mortgage company. I knew my contract was going to come due. And so I started talking to him, and that's, I have my bachelor's in marketing and my master's in international business and marketing. So I went to work for him doing loans, and we started doing all this marketing, right? Kind of just fell into it and created postcards back in the day when we used them a lot and blew up his company. And so that's kind of how I fell into it. But what I liked about it is you're dealing with money, right? And I love numbers. So, and that's kind of how I fell into it.
And let's talk about the history right now. Going back in 2001, 2002, we're talking about it off camera. That whole history of leading up to 08, why is it different now? Why don't you think we are not at a top right now? And we actually are historically low levels of supply.
We're at probably the lowest we've ever been in supply. And I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on right now. But if you look back at recessions in general, right? Because everybody keeps saying we're going to go into a recession. So let's hit that little negative first. There's only been two recessions that we actually had value of real estate go down, right? That was the SNL in the 80s, close to the 90s. And then again, in the Great Recession, which if you really look at it, it was a depression. The GDP was down for so many areas. So those are the only two time in history. The Great Recession plummeted because of some things that had happened. And that's what you were asking me about with the 2002 to 2006, right? Mm-hmm. So what we were talking about is the average age for someone to create a family is 31 years old. Some people do it earlier, some people do it later, but that's when they go out and actually purchase your first home on average. If you go back 31 years from 2002, you're pretty much in where Roe versus Wade came in, which was abortion bill, and it plummeted birth rates for the next 10 years. The one thing about history and why it's so important to know it is so you don't repeat it. And so I don't want to get political, but that's why statues and all that bullshit's important, so that we remember the bad with the good. So if you didn't know this, well, takes in California alone, I don't know where it's everywhere else, but it takes 20 years to build a housing tract from the date you want to start it to the day you do your shovel ready dirt, almost 20 to 25 years. So nationwide, we're building all these homes in 2002 to 2006, the most we've ever built. And it was 2005, I think, was 1.5 million, 2006, 1.6 million. And we're thinking, all these homes, we need all these homes because they're being absorbed, right? And it was because of the programs we had where you could actually buy a house with, and I don't mean derogative, but with the pulse. Basically, you didn't have to show any income, to show anything else. You could just buy this house. And people were buying 2 and 3 homes and housing tracts. That's what was making it look like we needed them. And if you watch this movie, The Big Short, they explain why these programs worked. It was because they rated them wrong. The rating agencies for these programs, the bonds, they rated them as AAA. And if they rated them properly, nobody would ever use these 100% financing, any of these programs, because the rate would be too absorbent. Nobody would use them. So if you look at what just happened there, and then you fast forward to today, the big difference is, and if I forgot anything, just ask me, because, you know, it's different when you're on the other side of the mic than the host, right? Because I do a lot of podcasts and radio, and it's different. So basically, if you look at where we are, so you look at that period of time, we lost, you know, so we had to absorb those homes for the next 6 years. And then from 2010 to 2019, we built the same amount of homes as we did from 1930 to 1939, which was 7.5 million. So you fast forward to today, where we're short some people say three. I've seen numbers up to 4.3 million. And if they say it's going to take a decade to get caught up at 2 million homes a year, well, we're still not building more than last year. We built 900 homes. This year, we were on schedule for 1.1 or 1.2. Who knows how we're going to be because of the shortage and everything else. And if you fast forward today, also, we're in the fourth year of our birth rate expansion on top of all that. So there's
a lot to dive down. I've written everything down from 1972 going to Roe v. Wade, dropping the birth rate right there. That affects it. That's why we need to go back into history, everybody, and see what happened on. In 2002 to 2006, you see that massive building. There's people that are buying two homes, people with a pulse walking in. That's why things, I think, are a little bit differently now, as you said. Then all of a sudden, builders are great. They build and build and build, and then they fall off a cliff, and they keep doing it. Then they stop. And then there's that big, really big gap going on. But Ed, let me ask you, what's that doing to the rental market for multifamily? We're seeing that our rents are getting pushed exponentially right now and increasing because there's no supply. Somebody's trying to buy a home, they're getting outbid, and they're continuing. So you're saying on your side, there's a lack of rental apartments in a lot of these markets. What do you think about that?
There's a lack of everything. Rental. I mean, there's 13 million more households today and 3 million less houses. So that's there's your math right there. So even if you're not a math major, 13 million more households and 3 million less houses to be bought.
So I'm not going to
what time period?
Right.
I don't want to get political on this as well, but
this is
we did a show with a demographer, and he said the my generation X, what happened with us was we had a lot less births than baby boomers. But what helped us was immigration. We had a lot of, whether it's legal or illegal. What's going to happen now with having all this illegal immigration coming in? They need housing as well. Where do you see the problem with that? Because you're talking about numbers that you can actually diagnose and say, here, this is it. How's that going to affect the housing market?
And that everybody thinks, you know, hey, I'm going to wait for this bubble so I can buy my house or buy this or whatever. There's no bubble happening, because if we're that short on home,
it's supply and demand, you're saying.
Yeah, ultimately. Exactly. Yeah. That's where we are. We're so short on supply, but so great on demand. All right. So, and if rates, let's not even talk about rates yet, but where we are right, just with that, right? If everything stayed the same, we'd still have the same problem going forward, just because what you just mentioned with more people coming in and the fact that we aren't building enough homes. On top of that, I don't know if you know this, but 1 in 4 single family homes that are being built today is being built to rent only, because people are building these housing tracts. The whole housing tract is being built to rent, the whole development. Right. You have these people that have hired these builders who normally build single family homes to sell. They're buying them. They're using that person to build this track, and then they go to build their next track. And these are people with money, the REITs, and people like I know a few of them.
Dude, we just picked up 150 acres for the same reason. It's the same thing.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's there's so many people doing it.
Yeah.
And you need that, but you also need place for people to buy. The one biggest issue that we see in California. So when rates went up where we just did, right, we're from where we were at to now, it took out 9 million people to buy nationwide. Wow. That's a lot of people.
That is a lot of people.
And a lot of people are complaining, well, rates are so high, rates are this. We're in 2018, 2019 rates, which everybody loved them, till we got to 2020 to 2021, where rates plummeted to the lowest we've ever seen. But we were in a recession at that time. Right. Because everybody was stuck at home. So recessions are always hindsight. You can see them after the fact.
I want to stick with this for a second, because we do Fannie Freddie debt for our multifamily deals, typically 10 years or more. We like long term fixed rate financing to take the rate risk off the table when we're doing these commercial deals. And I had people telling me that I was nuts like a year or two ago. because I got in at 4.25%, 4.5% on these 10 or 12 year deals. And I'm saying, dude, it worked at that time. It still works today. The rents have gone up since then. I sleep at night. I'm great with it because it's fixed and that rate risk is off the table. And now it's come back up. And so it's almost like they, you know, because so many people in the multifamily space got into these floater deals and it was the hottest thing since sliced bread. Oh, it's just never going to end. And like, dude, 60 days rates are up over, you know, 1.25%. And so it's like, guys, you can't just think the party goes on forever with these things because that happened overnight. It literally, you look back 10 years is like, whoa, it's like 290 almost right now, where it was, you know, like 130 less than that not too long ago. So it can happen quick.
Yeah. I mean, the fastest rates ever went up was October 87, that Black Monday or whatever. They went up in 8 hours, 1%. Mm-hmm. And we are like 1.5 or 1.75 over 30 to 45 days. And yes, it went up fast and it's still going because the Fed didn't do it like they should have. They should have been raising.
Well, I'm hearing guys saying that to really slow the inflation, we need to be in the teens. And they're not going to do that, but they're saying to really, you know, kind of pull the liquidity out of the market, you need to have interest rates in the teens right now.
I don't know, because we're already seeing builders not doing, you know, a lot of permits not being done, a lot of stuff not being, I mean,
they could be being bratty and pouty and they'll come back to the table. You never know.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I act.
No, I just think there's never been a wrong time to own a house or own multifamily, own as an investment. This is the easiest way to get your first investment, because a lot of people ask me, is buy your first home with 3% down or 3.5% down, you know, first time home buyer stuff, FHA or conventional.
Or you can hack it up to 4 years, Stan, right?
Yes, you can do 1 to 4 units.
Yeah. Yeah. No, people, it's like a thing. People call it house hacking. They live in one unit and then they rent out the other three or two or whatever.
But we used to call that, hey, buy a single. I've been doing that for 25 years.
I'm trying to stay hip with the kids, man. All right. I'm trying to stay cool. All right. I'm trying to stay relevant with it.
No, the thing about, I always want people, if you're married or single and you're buying your first place, go buy a duplex, triplex, or a fourplex, right? Live in one of them, rent out the other ones. You can use the rents to offset your income. I helped a good friends of mine buy a duplex in San Clemente in California. I don't know where that is. That's like where people always loved it. A block from the beach, you know, and they did it with, and they've been living there now. And the one side they rent out Airbnb and it's paying their mortgage and more constant, you know, and so they'll never get rid of it. And it's, you find ways like that so that you don't have to worry about, but if it's your first house, you don't care. You don't have kids. You don't have, you don't need to worry about it. Then you go buy that other house for you later.
And let me ask you, you've been talking a lot of negativity as far as the numbers. I want to get even more negative. What about areas?
Actually, that's positive. That's not negative.
No, but I'm just saying, as far as like we're having all these things where we have a lack of housing,
that's a positive thing on if you own a home and if you're an investor, that's a positive.
Yes.
Thing.
But I'm looking at it from somebody wanting to buy a house. If you're going now, let's say Florida, those numbers are even worse because we're talking about local markets now. We're talking across the United States, there's that. But when you have people moving to certain areas, whether it's Arizona, Florida, Texas, how bad is it there? Those prices are definitely not going down because there's even more of a shortage there. Wouldn't you agree with that?
And inflation.
Yeah. I mean, inflation increases the value of the home alone, right? Mm-hmm. The people who get the worst with inflation is low income and lower middle class who don't own homes, mm-hmm. right? People own assets or don't really get hurt. I mean, you get hurt, but not as bad. So, I mean, that's just, you have to, so basically, what you just said, what's going to happen is less people are leaving California. Less people are going to be leaving New York. Less people will be moving to other places. We're at that point where if you didn't move 2 years ago, mm-hmm. you're paying top dollar where you're moving to. Yes, you're leaving. If you're leaving California, you're getting top dollar for your California home right now. But what we're seeing here, instead of, you know, 26 offers on a house, we're down to 14 offers. And instead of 14 offers, we're down to maybe 6 offers. And some other places, instead of 5, they're having 3, mm-hmm. right?
I'll challenge that thought process though, because I left New York in 2011 and it had nothing to do with, you know, like the affordability of, well, no, it did. I will take that back. It did have to do with the affordability. It had to do with the weather, but also it was the tax structure. You know, I moved to a place where there's no state income taxes. Cost of living is dramatically lower. It's a much more business friendly climate. So I still think there's a lot to be picked up by exiting some of the more socialist states if you do move to some of these areas that do promote freedom more. So I think there's like the business side and the tax side that you could be getting stuck with still.
No, I see that too. Yeah. But I also see companies, you know, California needs to change. I'm in California. We're fighting to make changes. You can see the difference of most people seeing that. I've seen more liberals becoming less liberal, more middle of the road Democrat or closer to Republican than the last year than any other time in history, just because they don't want to be seen. I'm not trying to get politics. This is just what we're talking about. They don't want to be considered as a socialist or, you know, that whole thing. That's not me. That's not what I was supposed to be part of. And so they're moving the other way. So I see them voting differently this election that's coming up.
Mm-hmm. Ed, this is more of an opinion question. Is the dream died for home for people wanting to own a home? Because when I was growing up in my early 30s, that was the dream. My parents were immigrants. So like, that's the American dream, buy a home and live in that home and retire in that home. Have you seen those preferences change over the past 20 years?
No. So when I moved from Colorado back to California when I was a kid, we moved to Turlock, right? It was a small place. My parents couldn't afford to buy. We just left 20 acres in Colorado, right? With the, it had a manufacturing home, but they couldn't afford to buy back then. So I'm just, what I'm getting at is, depending on how you're coming to California, if you're in California, most people are making enough to where they're buying in California, or if they can't, they're moving to Texas. They're moving to other places. So I still think it's there. It's just, you have to get a different job. What I mean by that is there's 11 million jobs out there right now. It's no other time in history could you go and get a top paying job very much easier than you could before, because there's not that many people going for those. So if you're going to work for somebody is what I mean.
Dude, we just lost a hire for our nanny. She went to take a marketing job at Carvana. It's like, come on. It's like, I'm not saying that I'm like really pumped for it and everything, but it's like completely opposite ends of the spectrum. So there's definitely a lot of opportunity on the hiring market right now.
I dropped my wife off in the airport yesterday in San Francisco, and don't tell her, but I went through In-N-Out, and on there it said $19 an hour to start, up to $23 an hour.
Yeah, man. Plus benefits.
In-N-Out. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's that. So, I mean, it's not minimum wage jobs. You can't afford that in California. So what you're saying, I came from San Diego when I moved to up here, and down there, I remember a receptionist was costing you $2,500 to $3,000 a month when I left, and I got here and a receptionist cost you $1,200. We don't even use one now, but as example, difference of price points. The other thing you have to look at when you're
leaving, stay there for a second. My grandmother managed a like a convenience store, like a little like burned dairy kind of milkshake thing, you know, 15 years ago, right? It was like the last time she worked. She was making like high $6 an hour. I mean, that's like 15 years ago. Think about that for a second.
Minimum wage.
It was slightly above, and she was the manager. I mean, it's just things. It's just, whew.
Yeah. I mean, it's expensive. And that, you're talking about business. It's so expensive as a business owner. That's why a lot of people are going more virtual assistants, or they're going fractional this, fractional CFOs, fractional this, because it's so much cheaper to have that person on staff and do what you want to do. But tax reasons, California is the worst for businesses right now, right? So, but if you look at property tax, our property tax is no more than 1.25% unless you have Melrose. If you go to Texas, it's 3% for property taxes. So when I ran the numbers, you have to make over $400,000 a year to make sense to move from California to Texas. And if you're not in that price point, you might as well stay.
Let's talk about the gurus saying that a house, a lot of them, you know, Grant Cardone's of the world, they're saying, you know what, rent your home. It's not an investment. It's a, you know,
the liability. I saw A-Rod the other day.
Yeah, but he owns a plane, right?
and probably, assets versus liabilities is the debate right now, for sure.
And I understand that, but the next question is, do they own their own home? Mm-hmm. Any of those guys that don't own a home?
It's a good question.
I would think that they do. Yeah. To be honest,
so it's much easier when you're worth millions of dollars or that kind of stuff to tell other people what to do, even though you're not doing that. Another prime example, Dave Ramsey. He's huge about, don't buy your home until you can pay cash for it or all this kind of stuff. It's like, okay, well, that means you'd never be a homeowner in California, right? The only thing I like what he talks about is keeping your credit card debt down to nothing, right? I'm against cutting up credit cards because you've just lost all that history for that.
I'm getting 2% minimum in points on everything. So there's a pickup there as well.
Yeah. Well, it's everything. It's like, if you utilize it properly,
and they're not getting my money. Right. Well, think about this too. Like, I pay my credit cards off weekly just because I'm a weirdo, but everything I do, I'm getting at least minimum 2% on it, and I'm swiping something with the bank's money. They're never getting access. I never use a debit card. They never have access inside my actual account. And the minute I try to challenge something because I don't agree with it, the bank just pushes them away. So they do my bidding for me. So I never have, my money's never at risk. I feel very confident and comfortable with it, and they pay me to use it. and they never make anything off of me.
But if you listen to Dave Ramsey, he tells you, you know, pay him down and cut him up. Well, yeah. The problem is your FICO score is going to go from, if you had a, you know, once you pay him down, you're going to be in the 700s down to a five something because you've just got rid of all that history. It's not an installment loan that's supposed to be paid off and gone. Credit cards are the how you utilize them. How much do you use of your limit? That kind of stuff. It's important to keep those, but utilize them properly so that you don't, because he's like, go get them. You can do it. Just get a manual underwrite. You know how many companies out there do manual underwrites in the mortgage industry anymore? Less than 1%. Wow. Yeah. So you've just taken out all these people who could help you with really good rates to go down to this one because you, Dave Ramsey told you to cut them all up.
Yeah. And with inflation, I mean, if you're buying a house, even today, inflation continues. Is the government going to stop printing money? I doubt it. Okay. You know, is the population going to decline? You know, I don't think so. So those two things alone tells me that if I get a reasonably priced interest rate and I have it fixed for 25, 30 years, whatever, it's probably going to be worth more. It gives me a place to live. It gives me enjoyment with my family, pride of ownership, blah, 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 blah. You only live once. To me, I do it. I like it. I love owning my own house. You know, sometimes I do stupid shit and spend more on it than I should, but that's a personal, you know, choice. And, you know, fortunately, you know, the investments are paying off and we can do that. But I think even for the average person, if you go buy a $400,000 or $500,000 home, you know, mortgage it well, and, you know, you buy it in a path of progress where population is going to continue increasing. I personally like it.
You forgot one of the most important things, Jake. You're paying that loan off 5 years from now in cheaper dollars. I mean, no one says that. So that's one of the benefits. And if they continue to print and you have this inflation, your $300,000 loan 5 years from now is been inflated. So it's so much cheaper to pay back in those dollars. And you've had an asset. But I think more importantly, it really comes down to what your goals are. Are you a long-term person? If you're long-term, then owning a house, absolutely. If you're short-term, you're in and out and you're trying to time the market, may not be a wise investment for you. May not be a wise asset for you.
Dude, it's safety too for most people who, you know, may not put enough into a 401k, may not save for retirement. At least by the time you get to the end of it, that $500,000 home may be worth eight. And now you haven't saved anything your whole life, but you paid off that house and now you get 800 G's sitting there. At least you can potentially retire.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's literally a forced piggy bank for you know, a lot of folks. And I think that's the thing, you know, many people miss on. Dude, Dave Ramsey, cut up your shit and then spend your money and don't have, you know, any kind of asset behind you. It's assets over liabilities, guys. And whether it's an asset or it's not, it's going to have value, you know, towards the end of your life. Right. So
the other thing you didn't talk about is, oh, by the way, I need you out next month.
Yes.
Right. Your landlord can come to you and say, hey, I need you out, right? They can tell you, you know, if you're on a lease.
Family disruption is the worst.
Yeah. So that's, and also you look at, all right, so right now in my town, a one bedroom, one bath home, or I'm sorry, apartment is $15,000-$18,000 a month. A two bedroom, one bath apartment is $18,000-$17,000 a month. In one town over, Lathrop, a one bedroom, one bath apartment is $2,200 a month.
Bling.
So if you look past in 20, you know, 10 years ago or 15 years ago, whatever, we're in the 12s, we were in the 9, you know, I mean, it's just, that's the one thing. If you looked at the history of rents that have always pretty much went up, I mean, during the Great Recession, they went down a hair, but they pretty much went up because where else are you going to go? If you're not going to own your home, you're going to rent. And you're at the mercy of that renter. Not that that's a bad thing if it's a good landlord, but the way things are in California now, we have this rental thing they put in more, but basically not total control, but we can only go up so much percent of rents each time. And if you don't, it's hard to get to market rate. So it's a type of it. So what's happening now, every time that the lease is coming due, they're raising it that percentage so that they stay within there. So if you move out, they can put somebody else in there at the current market rents. So instead of being a good tenant and not having your rent go up much, except every other year, now it's going up every year, no matter what.
You know,
thank you, government.
I always said it. You can't live in the internet. You need a place to live, right?
Right.
You're not getting on Amazon just yet. That's right.
Ed, before we go to the short answers, I like the three steps here. You have the goals, personalized strategy, and implement. You want to go through those real quick?
Well, it's just basically you have to figure out what you're trying to do, right? Because it's not always what I can qualify you for on a home loan. It's what works in your budget too, right? And that's the biggest thing. Stay within that budget. Create a budget and stay within it. If you can't afford a home in that budget, then look to a different area. Look to maybe, again, go back, what I keep saying, go get a different job. Right. And just because I had a lady who went back to school for 2 years to finish her bachelor's, and then they went and bought a home because she got a better paying job by doing that. Mm-hmm. I have many business owners who are self-employed, architects that I have them go work for an architectural firm making $120,000 to $130,000 a year instead of the 30 grand they showed on their 1090, you know, their actual business account, so that they could go own a home. So you do what you need to do to own these homes. That's the, you know, figure the goal, work a plan, and then we implement whatever that plan is.
All right, gang, let's take a quick timeout to hear from our sponsor.
Are you looking for ways to improve your life?
Here at Jake and Gino, our mission is to empower students through financial education and the vehicle of multifamily investing.
Yes, Jake. We agree that a person with financial intelligence can change the world for the better.
We've created our proprietary three-step framework, Buy Right, Manage Right, and Finance Right, that we teach to our community. This framework, along with education, our one-on-one mentorship, on-site boot camps, and the amazing community, has propelled our students to massive success.
We've all been there. We've had so many students that have been able to shift their mindset, overcome limiting beliefs, and set a clear path to achieve their goals. Whether you're currently fixing and flipping, wholesaling, or buying single-family rentals, and you know that multifamily investing is the right vehicle for you, I encourage you to visit jakeandgino.com/apply to schedule your complimentary consultation with our team. And I want to let you know, this isn't a high pressure sales call. It's really just a discovery call to get to know each other better and see if we're a good fit for working together. And if for any reason we're not a good fit, our team has tons of resources we will share with you to help you along your journey.
If you're ready to stop spinning your wheels, go to jakeandgino.com/apply and schedule your call now. All right, we're back. And I want to stay with this assets versus liabilities, because a lot of, you know, the gurus, if you will, are saying, you know, an asset is something that puts money in your pocket every month. A liability is something that takes money out. And that's the definition that's been created. And I don't know if it's necessarily true, but I think the issue that I've always had with it is that a home being a physical asset is going to appreciate over time if you keep it up. Whereas I look at a liability like a car. It's going to depreciate over time. It's not going to be, you know, worth anything. And I think the argument is made, if you manage a house well, it can, quote unquote, put money in your pocket every month. To, you know, to Gino's point, if you get a low fixed rate mortgage, low fixed, you know, interest rate on it, over time, you're paying it back with cheaper dollars. That home, if it's in a path of progress, is going to appreciate. So you're actually, you're building up net worth over time within that home. So technically, it is putting money in your pocket the same way a stock would. You know, unless you have a stock that's paying dividends, is it putting money in your pocket every month? So I think, you know, I question that logic, for sure. Before we move on, anything else to say about that, Ed?
Yeah, I want to stay on the stock thing. All right.
Yeah.
So when you buy a piece of property, right, to live in, right?
Yeah.
You're leveraging it, right? You can put 3% down on your first mm-hmm. one, 5% down. If you're a veteran, you can put nothing down. But if you buy a stock, you have to pay the full price for that stock. Right. Yeah. So if I'm buying $200,000 worth of stocks, I got to have $200,000 to do that. But if I'm buying a house for $200,000, I need $6,000 to put down. And then now that house is, I get all the appreciation of that house. So what people don't realize is, it doesn't matter how much you put down on that house, you still get all the appreciation.
Mm-hmm. And it's a basic human need. So let's like stop kidding ourselves, right? It gives you, you know, safety and security, and I value that shit. So,
and over time, your payment's going to be so much lower than what the market rents are.
Yeah.
Right. And that's, I mean, it's important to build personal wealth. And like you said earlier, most people don't have a 401k, 403b. They don't have an IRA. But if they buy at least that house, they can build personal wealth through the house to start. And then maybe they go get a second home, right? That's the other thing. I have a lot of people who used to live in the Bay Area or in other places where they can't afford there. So we help them go buy a house somewhere else that they either rent or they use as a second home, and then Airbnb it whenever they're not there.
So. And then you get into that first home. You literally, it helps you become a better functioning citizen. You're paying taxes, you're paying bills, you're seeing how it works. And maybe you learn a little bit, and then you go and buy a second rental home, or you go buy a fourplex or something after that, to the point. So I think it helps people professional up and mature in many ways as well. So can't discount this stuff. Is 31 still the number? I'm just questioning that. You said 31 is sort of the number, the strike point now, where people go out. Is that the current number that's in place? Because I saw 32,
but on average, it's 31. Because some people do it earlier and some people do it later. It just depends. I mean, it can change, you know, it's an average. So it's,
well, I just want to know if that number was current. Cause I'm looking at like a lot of these millennials that have been like basement dwellers living like Schmeagel, you know, in their parents' places and stuff. I'm like, is that number even getting pushed out further? And that goes kind of goes back to what you're talking about in 06. What, and I didn't want to interrupt you earlier, the number, and you're saying in 06, there was a surplus because they got the population numbers wrong. It was 06 to 08. What was the surplus at that, in that rough time frame?
I don't know that number, how many we had. It's just the fact that we couldn't, if you look at how many houses went foreclosure, right, during those period of time, millions and millions of them, right? I think it was 9 million at the top. Where now
surplus, you know, at the top.
That was actually went foreclosed on, right? All those homes. So that could be that amount of homes that were surplus at that time.
Yeah.
I don't have those numbers because no one ever asked me that question.
No, I'm just, I find this stuff fascinating because
I'm just saying no, it has. So I don't, now I'll get it for the next time.
Yeah. And then what was that next inflection point when this, say in 08, 09, there was the surplus, and then where did the absorption take place? When was that next kind of?
Well, we started absorbing in 2008. Because the bottom of 2000, so in December of 2008 was the bottom of the market in California for us, right? And I don't know if that was the way everywhere, but some places was different. Some places were further than that because in California, we foreclose. We don't have to have a court date, right? Mm-hmm. Where some other states have a judicial foreclosure process that took a lot longer to get through, and they took a lot longer to get to their bottom. But that was for us, the bottom in California was 2008 at December.
I guess what I'm trying to understand is and you may not know, and that's fine. I just, do you know at what point we went from a surplus to a deficit? Cause now we're kind of in that deficit zone and trying to, you said about 10 years before.
Well, it took So from 2008 to, it took about 6 years to absorb all those homes.
Gotcha.
Okay. Right. So that'd be like 2012, I think we started going the other way. And then they started. And then again, from 2010 to 2019, they only built so many homes. You can actually go back and look for and I didn't have charts because I didn't know if I could show
it. I just love this stuff. Yeah.
But you can go and search it and you'll find the charts that say how many homes they built each year during that period of time. And you can see where they stopped and then when they came back. And I mean, here, prime example, town I live in, we used to build 1,000 homes a year. We're at 100.
Yeah. Yeah. And to your point, you know, people are built for rent and everything. So there's not as many, even if something looks like it's being built, it may be a rental and not something, you know, for purchase as well. So,
well, that's not happening in our town because we just don't have enough of area right now that was zoned. Gotcha. And that's the other problem.
Nationwide, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
Definitely. Because I know all the guys are doing a lot of them. And the only place they're not really doing a lot of them in is California. They're doing some of them in Sacramento, but they're in Arizona, Texas, Florida, other places.
Gotcha. Any book recommendations, anything you've read in the last few years that you want to recommend to the folks?
I was reading again, The Millionaire Next Door.
You guys, I love that one. Yeah. I drink Coors Light.
Right. Two cases. I drink two types of beer, Free and Budweiser.
That's right.
Just because they start, you know, people think that you have to dress a certain way, have to show that, when in reality, most people who have a lot of money wear t-shirts. They don't wear, you know, the other stuff. And, you know, it was just to remind myself again that we're on the right path to do what we're trying to do.
Yeah, I love that book. Yeah. You know, you read that one?
Yeah, I read it a while ago.
Yeah, it's from the 90s. It's an old one. Yeah. And I would love to see them updated, right?
But it's not sexy. The problem is nowadays, there's no clickbaity thing. It's boring, but that's what creating wealth is. Creating wealth is boring. It's called what we call long-termism. You're not going to get wealthy over 2 or 3 years. It's going to take years for you to get wealthy, and it's going to get that instant gratification out. And that's something that's really hard to sell. But for me, it's one of those books that I read out of college. I'm like, wow, you know, compounding over time, you know, buying a car, paying that off, buying your home, paying it off, and letting everything work itself out as far as inflation and as far as investing your money. I mean, it just makes total sense to me.
And the other thing that's not a book, but as I don't know if you know this, I do a couple of podcasts. One of them is called Inner Edison. Your greatest accomplishments come from your greatest defeats. And basically after doing that for a year and a half, it's more ingrained to me more than ever to make sure you have a coach, a corner man, somebody who's there, go to different masterminds, not necessarily in your industry, but outside your industry, just to learn and get those people in that place for you to help you build it faster. Because when you don't have them, it takes a lot longer and you make these mistakes. And that's why it's so important to have that.
You a precious metals guy?
Me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nah, not so much. Just bricks and mortar. I got you.
Just bullets.
Oh, so dude, that's brass, dude. I got you.
You lied. Yeah, brass, the only precious metal. Yeah. Get them before. Yeah. I mean, that's a problem with California, right? Handguns. We can't get any new handguns, right? Anything that was manufactured up until this certain date that they put this new law in effect, we can get those. So the older, you know, SIGs, all any of those older guns I've been around, but none of the new stuff. And that's the, you know, again, I don't want to get political, but it should, they should not.
I think there's
be
something called the Bill of Rights. You might want to just check it out and show it to your local politicians.
Well, how they stopped it, because you can still get the other ones. So they were hoping that the manufacturer would stop making the older ones, right? But what they did is they made a law where they can only have if they can imprint the serial number on the brass. And that's how they stopped it. So nobody has that technology.
All right, so tell us the podcast, the website where folks can find you.
Well, they can just go to edparco.com, which is the easiest, has all my information there. That shows my Inner Edison podcast, which is the greatest competence covering your greatest defeats. I have Helping the Brave, which is helping veterans once you take the uniform off. That's a live on Facebook, LinkedIn, and YouTube Tuesdays and Thursdays at 3:30 Pacific. And the other thing I do is a local radio show called Real Estate Jerky. We give you something to chew on. Been doing that for about 4 years, and we talk about just that, but really about community, because when you buy, you're buying the community, right? So you have to, it's everything that goes with that. And that's like, I do a ton of lives from that show, which is amazing. So
awesome. New Dad, let's wrap this.
This is going to be a difficult one for me to wrap because we've gone through the spectrum from the 70s to today, but it started out, I guess, back in Roe v. Wade, when, you know, the birth rate plummeted. And I think we need all go back into history and look at demographics and go through the different, you know, the Gen Xers, the millennials, and see what's going on with buying habits. I mean, as far as that goes, we didn't get into Airbnbs and those short-term rentals as well, but that's really taken a bite out of people being able to buy second homes. But seeing that decline and then going into the 2000s and seeing that run up and then seeing those people buying that second home and buying up track land, and you think that they need that, and you think that there's such a supply and those assets are being absorbed, but they're not. And then from 2008 on, we have the recession and a lot of home builders aren't building homes for those 5 or 6 years. And I forgot what the number was, Jake, 13 million new households that were created in the last several years.
That's what I wrote down.
That need homes. They need homes. And I don't want everyone to think about what this certain cycle that we're in right now is like any other, because I personally don't think it is. We have high inflation. We really can't raise it. Usually when you go into recession, you can, you know, raise interest rates to slow the economy, or drop interest rates to slow the
that lever's the already been, yeah,
and it's gone. We can't do that right now. And, you know, with supply chain issues, not being able to build homes, that brings another certain element to it that we haven't had in a while. So there's so many things going on. I guess the whole moral to what I'm saying is don't buy into the conventional wisdom that says, oh, we're going through recession, home prices are going to drop. Do your due diligence, go out there. And more importantly, think about what your goals are. What are you trying to accomplish? When I got into my home building early on, I had a mortgage. Now that I'm older, I have two homes, personal homes. Neither one of them has a mortgage. I can sleep comfortably at night. I have lines of credit if I want to tap them. But that's my personal goals. I want you guys to think about what your personal goals are and your personal journey is. And I personally don't think that you will go wrong by buying a home and thinking about it and living in it and investing in it for the long term. You can never go wrong with that. It's inflation, owning an asset, and that comfort. And Jake, we didn't mention this, and this is really important. That pride of home ownership. There's something about renting an apartment, and I've done that when I moved to Florida 5 years ago. I rented it for 8 months. It wasn't the same feeling as owning it.
I was surprised how you guys were living. You usually take better care of your stuff.
It was. And
I'm messing with you, dude. I'm totally messing
with you. It's true. No, it's true. Like, yeah, I had a little nick on the road. Yeah,
no, kids dude, around. I ain't messing with you so bad.
But listen, no, this is really important. We didn't mention this. Net worth. When you look at a person's net worth in this country, look at African-Americans. Their net worth is significantly less because they have less home ownership. A person who owns a home has a significantly higher net worth. So I want everyone out there to really think about that. Once you own a home, your net worth will significantly grow. So if that's what your goal is, to create equity in your life, to create net worth, please consider going out there, being responsible, working on your goals, and purchasing a home.
Can I add to what you just said there?
Absolutely.
So the personal wealth that you're talking, you know, the equity, somebody who owns a home has $250,000 more than somebody who rents.
On average?
Yes.
On average.
Yes, exactly. That's really, really important.
And that's a house. That's not multiple houses. That's just
it's a house. One. And then you could take that equity, everybody, and repurpose that.
And
equity,
you didn't start with 250, right? Keep in mind, you didn't start with 250 to buy that house in most instances.
Mm-hmm. No, you started, if you're buying, you know, depending on where you live, it's a $300,000 house. You started with $9,000 at that was equity. Yep. That's your down payment.
Love that. So it's proof's in the pudding, Dave Ramsey. Son. Hey, Ed, you ever in Knoxville? I'll buy you a Coors Light, man. You get it on me. It's free.
I doubt it. I won't do Coors Light.
Dun dun dun.
I knew I liked that, bro. It's Coors Light.
Guys, it's been fun. Ed, thank you so much. Gino, I will see you next time. Take care.
See you, brother. Bye, guys.
Thanks for having me.
Imagine earning a degree that prepares you with real skills for the real world. Capella University's programs teach skills relevant to your career so you can apply what you learn right away. Learn how Capella can make a difference in your life at capella.edu.